The complete text of the first 10 volumes of Dr. Fleckwing's very, very short steampunk novels by Stephen L. Peck. Number 1. The night vouchsafed ancient prophecies as one by one the stars abandoned the sky, and the clanking aeriform flotilla approached from the east under the power of their slowly churning propellers. I pulled on the ponderous torque wrench, 100 pounds, 150 pounds, 200 pounds. The gauge was nearing 250. With a shattering crack, the bolt head snapped, and I fell back on the deck. The weapon would be useless. Number 2. The arrival of the lone biplane sheared through the mood like a whetted adamantine blade, and the skies above the alpine meadow, moments ago festive with ribbons streaming from the airships, now felt accursed. As the unholy machine returned to its masters and the celebrants panicked to their vessels, my bride paused, then picked up the skirt of her black lace trousseau, kicked off her slippers, and cried, "Go!" And we ran. Number 3. The extempore band on the floating zeppelin played well into the night, and we danced like fireflies, branding the night with our turns, graceless bows, and laughter. Yes, much of that, and why not? But as the sun rose, our merriment was stilled, and we went outside and gripped the rails and stared down at the fragments that remained. No one spoke. No one could. What could we say? Number 3, the sequel. "Aim for the trebuchet," I snapped, as another flaming tar-covered boulder passed just below us. Angling the Gatling gun down, she cranked the handle viciously. Spinning back in exasperation, they go behind the palisade. This is useless. Sitting on the deck, I ignored her and attended to the weapon in my lap, and tried calmly to dial in the pulse that would leave us bloodied, yes, but the machines below lifeless. Number 4. The raving howl had slipped to a zephyr, so we dared the ratlines to the top of the envelope, just as the sun slipped into the gap between the cold, wet stratus and the Earth's horizon, bathing us in gifted rays of fever orange. And there on the silk and canvas, sat a modest and bedraggled Junko, its eyes closed, breathing. Part 1 of Number 5, Trilogy. Today we flew our new steam-powered Zeppelin over the remains of a lost robot city, still decorated with once silver-coated Christmas trees and frozen mechanical reindeer. Later, as we drifted over snowy mountains, and as the moon shined like a lamp above the cloud-shrouded peaks, we ate a dinner of faux unicorn haunch over a bed of roasted parsnip roots. Merry Christmas. Part 2 of Number 5, Trilogy. I am standing deer-eyed in the oozing, sedgy mud outside the downed ship, while my assistant tries to wake up the mind inside. Catastrophically, the ship is now hardly alive, in the usual sense. Our bête noire has sliced out her memory and set up a loop of perceptual input that creates in her the illusion that she is flying through billowing, airy clouds. I can hear the ship singing old wailing songs. I turn away. Part 3, the thrilling conclusion to Number 5, Trilogy. We were surprised to find a butterfly so high up. It was black and yellow and exhausted, clutching to the tight gray canvas with a casual grace that belied its malapropos birth on the wafting dirigible. The labored rhythmic pulses of its thorax, however, hinted that it was struggling, dying. Even so, it came from somewhere, a forest remnant perhaps. "Start the engines," I shouted above the wind. Number 6. She stood with me on the edge of a dying sea, in her hand the last and least vulnerable thing in existence, a treasure, a gift. It quivered and smiled, and she smiled back and released it with a puff of air from her lips, and it, breathing for the first and last time, launched itself towards the stars. Number 7. The now arenaceous seabed was empty of life, of both flesh and metal pith, The scouring war left us but rotting carcasses tossed, and they, frozen cold in the void of our devising, they would not recover, nor would we. The set of her face told the tale entire, the devastation, the wasting, and now the end. "Let's go," she said. Yet as I swung onto the deck, if only for a second, I swear I could smell lilac on the wind.